You are traveling through another dimension, a dimension not only of sight, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of imagination. That's the signpost up ahead. Your next stop, the Tone Zone.
Welcome to the Tone Zone. I'm your host, Anthony Mullen, and today's the season two premiere of the Tone Zone. And what better way to start off season two than to have another edition of the Tone Red Zone? This time, we're talking about the biggest game of them all, the Super Bowl. I'm pleased to be joined by Justin Buckland. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. It's a pleasure to be here as always.
And Mitchell Marinos, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you.
So, we got to talk. It's been a while. We took a little bit of a winter break, and it's been a while since we did Tone Red Zone. So we got to catch up on a few stuff. This episode is mostly going to be revolved around the playoffs. So let's start with the team who did not make the playoffs, not even close. Our Cleveland Browns. A lot of changes since the last time we talked about the Browns. I think the biggest one, arguably, Freddie Kitchens. Gone after a season. Now you have Kevin Stefanski, the former offensive coordinator for the Minnesota Vikings. What was your first reaction of Stefanski's hire?
My initial reactions, I was really disappointed, I guess. I wanted either Greg Romans from the Ravens or Saleh from the 49ers. And I mean, it did come down to Saleh and Stefanski. And Stefanski was the top guy last year, and he won this year. So I don't know. I've come to kind of an agreement with it. Like, his interview, his press conference was pretty good, and I mean, he got the expectations, I guess, up again. But I mean, I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Initially, I was not very happy with the decision, though.
Justin?
I was a little bit surprised, but kind of like what you said, Mitchell, I also came to the conclusion that this could probably be a good thing for the Browns, and that he's shown to win, and hopefully that will change the Browns here. But like you said, his interview press conference, he's got the hype up for the Browns. And I mean, I don't want to get my hopes up yet because, you know, we do this all the time. And then we also get disappointed in the end of the year. But I really do think they've got a lot of weapons. And I think Freddie Kitchens was not able to pull them together. And hopefully Stefanski will.
Yeah, I think he's an instant step up from Kitchens, but I don't really know what of a compliment that means, because Freddie Kitchens right now is the Giants tight ends coach. So he went from head coach of the Cleveland Browns to a position coach for the Giants. But when I heard the Stefanski hire, I just thought, like, it was very underwhelming, because if you think back to last year, the two final candidates for the head coaching job were Freddie Kitchens and Kevin Stefanski. So it just feels like they were going to their second option from 2019. And obviously, I do agree. I think Greg Roman was my pick, because not only do you get a guy who's done really good stuff with Lamar Jackson this year, you also take him away from the Ravens. So I think it was twofold. But the more I listen to Stefanski, the more professional he sounds. I mean, the more committed he sounds, really. He says he has a plan for Baker. He understands the problems they've had this year. But I'm still very hesitant. I can't trust this team and this organization at all. I have such bad trust issues.
It's hard to put trust in an organization that's failed you over and over and over again. But, like, I don't know.
Marshawn Lynch there. Over and over.
But, like, I don't know. I think we're all faithful that, I mean, we hope he's the guy to turn it around.
Yeah.
But, like, the one thing that interested me about Stefanski, like, I saw him. He had an interview with, I think, Nathan Zagura with the Browns or whatever.
Yeah.
And he was saying how he wants to, like, implement a fullback in all of, like, offensive drives. He said, like, he loves using a fullback.
That's great.
And the thing that would interest me is what's going to happen with that two-back set with Chubb and Hunt, because we saw that worked very well. Like, it kept the defense on their toes. I don't know what that would change of that. But
and especially now, because Kareem Hunt kind of had a run over with the cops recently, his value is probably going to keep plummeting. So maybe we can get him at a cheaper price. And I didn't hear about the fullback idea. I think that's an interesting idea, especially, like you said, how well that two-back system worked last year.
Yeah, I find it very interesting. And, like, he was saying how he likes that traditional football style of having a fullback because it gives that running back more comfort knowing he has that lead blocker. But at the same time, what happens with Kareem Hunt? Because if he wants that fullback, it kind of eliminates that two-back set we kind of use this year.
Yeah, definitely. I really like what Stefanski did, especially recently with the Vikings. I mean, you look at Kirk Cousins, what he did with Kirk Cousins, especially this year. Kirk Cousins had the best year of his career. He was in the Pro Bowl. And even though it did end pretty sourly against San Francisco, we'll talk about that later when we talk about San Francisco. It is kind of promising. You hear the stuff that Dalvin Cook has said about him, what Kirk Cousins has said about him, what Kyle Rudolph has said about him. It does feel like we're getting a professional in the building, and I don't feel like that's something we've had in a very long time. I think Hugh Jackson was a professional, but so much stuff was revolving around him that you had to fire him.
Yeah, I agree. I kind of see a little bit of Hugh Jackson now that you mention that. They're both kind of like, you can see like that players coach like mentality kind of, how they seem like more friendly. They seem like they get along with their players. I mean, you could see that from Freddie, but like at the same time, like, I don't know, you could just see that something was off. Like, you talk about how he doesn't care about stats, doesn't care about watching tape. Like, something's just off. And I don't know, I see like Stefanski as a nice offensive minded coach that could, I think, potentially really turn our offense around, which would be exactly what we needed.
Yeah. Justin, wouldn't you agree that kind of Freddie Kitchens last year was, I mean, every time you'd see him on the sidelines, it's complete deer in the headlights.
Yeah.
And having Stefanski kind of go around, he's personable. He looks and feels like a professional. And he has the experience that Freddie Kitchens ever had being an offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I do think it looks better than it was last year. And the offensive coordinator hiring of Alex Van Pelt is pretty promising. He's worked with Aaron Rodgers. He got high praise in Cincinnati. Have we hired a defensive coordinator? Or is it?
I don't think so yet.
I feel like it's down to Joe Woods, the 49ers defensive backs coach, or they're keeping Steve Wilks. What would you guys rather have?
I don't know. I think Steve Wilks didn't do a terrible job this year, honestly. There were times where like our defense was not performing how we would like it to, but at the same time, our defense wasn't terrible. We had a lot of injuries basically every week on the defense side of the ball that we had to put up with. I mean, our secondary was weak, I would say more than 50% of the season.
Yeah.
So it's hard to really put what he did into consideration in a sense.
Yeah.
But I think really either guy, I feel like I'd be fine getting that job because I didn't see really any disappointingness with Steve Wilks.
Yeah, if you look at kind of the Browns defense, I mean, once Myles Garrett got suspended, they fell off.
Yeah.
And that kind of does that to a group, that kind of catastrophe to their star player.
Yeah. Anthony, you brought up an interesting point about Freddie Kitchens, how like every time you'd see him on the sideline, he looked like a deer in the headlights.
Yeah.
And I know I've talked about this before, and their preseason game with Indianapolis, and you saw all throughout the year, all the way up until the incident with Myles Garrett, they were just undisciplined.
Oh, completely.
And the penalties and things like that. And I don't think Kitchens really was able to round up his players to play together. And hopefully with Stefanski, you see a little bit better of a player-coach relationship. So hopefully they'll be definitely more disciplined. And that, I think that's a big thing for them this year. Because, I mean, you saw Myles Garrett in that Steelers game. I mean, there was, what, 7 seconds left, and he just started going nuts. But
completely unacceptable.
Yeah. I think the main difference that we can see between Freddie Kitchens and Stefanski is Freddie Kitchens did not know how to distribute the ball to everyone on the team. You could see that like his play calling was just inconsistent.
Yeah.
He didn't know what was coming. Like it was just
He was trying to be way too clever.
Yes.
He had these I mean, you have the halfback draw on 3rd and 9 against the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
You have these little touch passes that Baker can't do, and there were like 4 of them were intercepted.
Yeah.
He got in his head too much.
Yeah, and like Stefanski, with the talent he had in Minnesota, I mean, you got Dalvin Cook, Thielen, Diggs, Rudolph. And you could see they all four of them have productive years. He knows how to distribute the ball. And if we can implement that here, I don't understand how we couldn't be elite.
Definitely.
For sure. I agree. And I think it's what you just said, Mitch, hit it spot on. The Browns have so many weapons that did not fully get utilized last year. And I think Stefanski brings that to the table for the Browns.
That's a really good point that you guys made. I never really thought about it. He did a really good job managing the talent of Minnesota. Because, I mean, that wide receiver core is really good with Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. And you look at Cleveland, that's pretty much it, we pretty much are in the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
Justin, going back to what you said about Freddie Kitchens and the lack of discipline with the Browns, I think the best example of that all year is Baker Mayfield. You have the progressive commercials every game while he's throwing three interceptions. You have him on Twitter replying to like Rex Ryan and Colin Cowherd and everyone. But this did actually happen today, the day we're recording this. Baker went on a bunch of Super Bowl pregame shows, and he took the blame for this season. He said, this was a very bad season for me, and I take full blame for this. What do you guys think about that? What's your reaction to that?
Obviously, I don't think the blame can be solely placed on one person, as we talked about before, who was the culprit. And the blame,
absolutely,
the blame for the Browns' failures. And I don't think it's solely on Baker. He obviously did not perform as well as we've seen him, and he had kind of a low year. But I think this for him was more taking charge and taking leadership and things of that, and that sort of nature.
Yeah. Mitch?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Baker was clearly not the main guy who you can put all the blame on.
Yeah.
But he did step up, you know, take leadership of the team. Obviously, if we had to look at someone, it'd be Freddie Kitchens, and we replaced
him.
So it would have to be, the blame would have to be Freddie, but Baker did the right thing, taking leadership for the team. I agree with what he did.
And yeah.
It's also encouraging to see that he did that and he's not, you know, getting down and out on himself, pulling an OBJ on the kicking net, something like that.
That's true.
I think definitely that shows, it's encouraging to see that he is really focused on Cleveland and he wants to be here and he wants to win with this team.
Yeah, I think what he did, speaking out against that and taking blame, I mean, obviously, like, I think Baker knows this, we all know it, Freddie's mostly to blame for this. The people who hired Freddie are mostly to blame for this, but Freddie's no longer in the building. You can't scapegoat him now. He's in New York. Baker did the right thing, taking the blame because he's the quarterback. He has to lead this organization. So when the Browns are winning, it's for Baker. It's on Baker. When they're losing, it's on Baker. And it was a smart choice by him to take blame. But again, with all this talk about the Browns and their new acquisitions, their new coaches, saying something is one thing, doing it's another. I need to see Baker commit to those words before I fully invest in what he's trying to say. And also, he needs to lose a few pounds. Have you seen the pictures of him in Miami?
No, I have not.
He looks horrible. He looks so bad.
There's time. He'll get in shape.
Hopefully so.
It's not looking good. Do you guys have anything else to say about the Browns before we move on?
Fingers crossed for a better year and a lot of changes. I think definitely the head coach. Everything revolves around the head coach. So I think replacing him definitely is encouraging. Whether it's not what we expected or what seems to be their second option from before, but I definitely think it is an upgrade from Kitchens.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if we can re-sign like Kareem Hunt, Joe Schobert, Demaryius Randall, obviously Schobert, our key guys that are free agents, I think we're going to have a much better season than next year. I mean, we've had a full year together. We can make corrections.
Yeah.
I think we'll have a better year.
I think for everybody, this is, I think last year was really good for almost everybody in the organization. It's a chip on your shoulder type year. I'd say everyone except Odell Beckham. If this season does not work, I think you have to move on from him.
Yeah. It was definitely a humbling year, to say the least.
Yeah, for everyone involved, yes. I mean, Nick Chubb, probably not, but he was fantastic.
Because I remember Skip Bayless before the year, there was a hype video about the Browns, and he was like, the Browns are looking to win it all. They're going to win the Super Bowl, all this and that. Like, they're looking to make it to the Super Bowl. But yet here we are, and Super Bowl Friday, and the Browns are not there and weren't even close.
Yeah, I have a Sports Illustrated issue that it's Odell and Jarvis on the cover, and it talks about why the Browns will finally make the Super Bowl.
Expectations were too high.
Definitely.
We all believed in the hype.
6 wins later, here we are. So let's wrap up talking about the Browns and move on to the playoffs. A lot has happened. This has been a very eventful playoffs. A lot of stories, a lot of questions for next year. And two teams really emerged as the dominant teams in both conferences, the Chiefs and 49ers. We'll talk about them. Let's talk about the runners-up. Looking at wild card weekend, I think there's two things that really popped in my head. Justin introduced this question to me. Is this the end of the Brady Belichick era? Because they lost to Tennessee at home in the wild card. That hasn't happened since 2009.
Yeah, that was very surprising to see. And just how impressive the Titans really looked. And I mean, I don't really think anybody was expecting them to go in and beat the Patriots at home. At least I know I didn't. And for them to go into New England and beat them the way they did was definitely a shock. But it didn't stop there for the Titans.
Yeah, I was expecting the Patriots to win that game, and I mean, with Brady being a free agent,
yes,
brings that question to the table as well. I mean, I personally, I can't see Brady wearing another uniform. He's a Patriot. I don't see him leaving, but I do think they're on the downward slope. I don't think, because you see the Patriots year in and year out, if they don't have a good season, they go to the offseason, they fix what they need to fix, and they're back at the elite level.
Yeah.
And I just see them on hitting that downward slope. I don't see them really recovering from this.
Yeah, I do think this is like a monumental moment in the Brady Belichick dynasty. I do think that I don't think they're going to go 5-11 next year.
No.
And I do think Brady's going to stay because, I mean, you look at Brady. I know Michael Jordan played for the Wizards. I know Joe Montana played for the Chiefs. But looking at it, it's more like, I'd expect Phillip Rivers to play for another team,
yeah,
which he is now. I think it's Tampa Bay. That's just my theory. But I don't see Brady moving on. It doesn't make sense, especially because the Patriots have traded all these young quarterbacks. They have traded Jimmy Garoppolo. They've traded Jacoby Brissett. And they don't have any other option now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is what I think the Patriots should do if they want to be back to the elite level.
Yeah.
So Brady's obviously on the downward slope. He's getting old.
Mm-hmm.
And next year, this is what they need to do if they want to stay elite.
Yeah.
They need to trade up in the draft, and they need to draft Trevor Lawrence.
Ooh. Now, next year, he's not eligible this year.
No,
he's eligible next year.
I think Trevor Lawrence would be the perfect guy to take over for Tom Brady.
Would you make that trade now and try to, I mean, say the...
I don't see really... Okay.
Like, say the Redskins are the worst team in the league.
Yes.
And say that you think that the Redskins are going to be the worst team in the league. Do you make that trade now?
I don't know. You could probably make some predictions thinking maybe these guys will be bad, but I feel like you got to wait. I don't... Like, you kind of see Tom Brady as the golden boy of football.
And absolutely,
you see if Trevor Lawrence is the golden boy of college football. I think that's the move the Patriots need to make.
I think that's yeah.
And Mitch, that's an interesting point you bring up there. But one more thing I want to talk about with the Patriots, Brady will be 43 going into next year. That's pretty old, and he's not gonna get any better. And like you said, Anthony, I can't see him wearing another uniform. Not at 43 years old.
Yeah.
What is that gonna do for his career? Going to another team and playing for another year or two and whatnot. But Mitch, you bring up an interesting point about Trevor Lawrence being like the golden boy of college football. And that could be interesting to see what happens with that. I definitely don't think they should trade that now. It's a little bit too risky now, but that could either go over very well or very bad, feel like. So
I mean, if you're in the 2021 draft, and like I said, say Washington has the number one pick, they believe that Dwayne Haskins is their quarterback, they're not going to pick Trevor Lawrence. How much would you have to give up for Trevor Lawrence if the Eagles traded, what was it? They traded for the second pick in 2016 with the Browns. They swapped first, got like a second. The Browns got a second, and they drafted Carson Wentz. Now, Carson Wentz was a D2 quarterback. How much do you give up for Trevor Lawrence, arguably the best prospect since Peyton Manning?
I mean, that's what they're going to need. They're going to need a quarterback. And I think absolutely. The Patriots, they want Tom Brady to stick around long enough so he can develop a quarterback like he did with Jimmy Garoppolo, but they shipped him to San Francisco. So they need to restart that process. Right now, he's 42 years old. They don't have a really solid backup quarterback who they expect to take over. So they need to draft someone. And I mean, they might as well go get someone that they know and they can believe than take a chance on someone else. Like for the Patriots this year, I don't see a quarterback that I could see taking over for Tom Brady. I just see Trevor Lawrence being that potential guy.
Yeah. I think it's interesting if that move, when this move happens, if the Patriots are confident in Brady, they'd probably make that move next year, even if it's not for Trevor Lawrence, if they trade up for another quarterback. Mm-hmm. There are a good amount of quarterbacks this year projected to go in the first round. You have obviously Joe Burrow, Tua Tagovailoa, Justin Herbert, mm-hmm. and Jordan Love. There's four quarterbacks, potentially first-round picks. If they trade up this year, what does that say about their confidence in Brady going forward?
I wouldn't say it brings down their confidence. I just think they're trying to start a new era in their organization.
It's a lot like the Jimmy G pick.
I just think they need to get a guy and they need to get someone to develop under Brady before Brady retires. Or, I mean, he could leave. I don't see him leaving, but yeah. I just think they need to start developing someone so they have someone to take over.
Yeah. Mitch, you know, I just thought about this as I was sitting here. In my personal opinion, I really don't see the Patriots trying to move up in the draft and getting a quarterback out of college. However, I just don't see that with Belichick. However, what I can see is them trading or making a couple moves to get a young quarterback who is already established in the league. Because you look at young quarterbacks that come out of the draft and how many of them are duds? Like Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston had so much hype. You look at Johnny Manziel, Tim Tebow. I mean, this is a huge risk they're taking.
Yeah.
And I don't see the Patriots as a huge risk-taking team. But what I could see is, now I don't know the answer to this question, who they would get, but maybe a young, established quarterback in the league, someone similar to that of Mahomes. I don't know that they would trade him, but
even got guys like Teddy Bridgewater,
yeah,
who
yeah.
are waiting in the wing. And we're going to be talking about Drew Brees next. If Drew Brees stays on for another year, Teddy Bridgewater seems fine in New Orleans, but he's like 27 now. He's got to get his starting job soon.
I don't expect Drew Brees to be in the league much longer. Him and Brady, the clock's ticking.
Yeah.
And I think they do see Teddy Bridgewater as the guy to take over. I think that's what their plan is. And if Teddy can be patient and wait for his time, then yeah, I mean, I feel like that's the best fit. I mean, wait another year. You are getting put into one of the best offenses in football. Go somewhere else where you might not succeed and you're back to square one. You never know. I think he should wait it out. I think it's the best fit for him and his career.
I think the biggest story that nobody's really talking about this playoff is during the Pro Bowl, Russell Wilson was named the starter for the NFC and he gave up his starting job to Drew Brees. And when I heard that, I was like, does Russell Wilson know something we don't? Is Drew Brees playing his last game in the Pro Bowl? Is he going to retire? And if so, what a way to go out, those three bad playoff losses back to back to back. I mean, for a guy who won a Super Bowl and a guy who's put up such great numbers.
He has so many records, countless records. And I mean, it does look kind of suspicious, not going to lie. It does look like he's wrapping up his career with that move. But at the same time, like, I don't think Drew Brees is satisfied. I think he wants to get back to work. I think he wants to get back on the field. But it does bring that question, is Drew Brees retiring? Personally, I think he's coming back. I think he at least wants another shot at it.
Yeah.
I mean, he just had another elite year. I mean, he has plenty of weapons. I don't see him walking away just yet.
Yeah.
That's, Mitch, you bring up an interesting point about they have so many weapons down in New Orleans. And, you know, originally I was going to say I do think Drew Brees is going to retire just because he's a free agent. He just broke that record, and he can just go out like that. But however, the past three playoffs obviously haven't been favorable for the Saints. So I think he's only 41, so I think he's got a couple more years left in him. I don't know how productive those years will be, but I think Drew Brees definitely has the work ethic, and he definitely wants to get back out there and go out on a high note.
Yeah. I mean, he's 41, you said.
Yeah.
And he, like, comparing him to Brady, Brees is still one of the NFL's best quarterbacks.
Yes.
Brady still is really good, but I think him and Aaron Rodgers, I pair him and Aaron Rodgers as really good game managers at this point. Mm-hmm. They're not gonna single-handedly carry the game, win you the game with 50 passes.
Yeah.
Like even what he did in the Super Bowl against Atlanta. He's not at that point anymore, and that's fine. If they adapt to that role, but Drew Brees, he could still throw 40 passes. I mean, bearing some kind of drop off, he's got Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara. He's got so many weapons.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be crazy to retire now with all this talent.
Yeah, I agree. The difference between Brady and Brees is Brady isn't the guy who's going to be going throwing 30, 40 passes a game anymore. He's the guy who's going to throw a couple screen passes, check downs. He doesn't sling the ball deep as much. And you look at Drew Brees and he's doing that week in and week out. He's still competing at a high level. The difference is Brees could win the game for his team. I think Brady has to use his other people around him to win the game.
Yeah, you look at last year's Super Bowl, a 10-3 victory that was mainly just won by the defense. Brady just did enough to win compared to the game against the Eagles, where Brady kept the team in the game. So that kind of separation between two Super Bowls is really fascinating.
Yeah, I think Brady is more valuable at this point as a team manager and just someone that the guys can rally around and play with, but he's definitely not the guy that's going to go in there and start slinging 30, 40 passes a game and start carrying the team. He's definitely still a very good quarterback. He's just not the same performer as he was.
Yeah. Do you guys have anything else to say about Brady and Brees? We're going to be moving on to another quarterback. He's going to be the MVP. Tomorrow he's going to be named MVP. Lamar Jackson went 14-2. It's kind of what Vic did with the Falcons in the early 2000s, and the rushing attack that they had. And I mean, looking at the season, looking back at each week as it went on in the regular season, it was hard to see the Ravens getting stopped.
Yep.
They had won 12 straight or something like that. And just to see them enter the playoffs and exit immediately to the hands of the Titans, it was pretty shocking. And I mean, it shows that Lamar Jackson has a lot farther to go as a quarterback.
Yeah, I agree. The thing, the Titans, they beat the Patriots surprisingly, and then they take down the top seed in the Ravens in back-to-back weeks, and you weren't expecting that from the Titans, kind of a sleeper team. And the thing I kind of saw from the Titans that you kind of saw back when the Ravens played the Browns is they shut down Lamar Jackson. He could not do what he wanted to do, what he's used to doing. He likes to make plays with his feet. He likes to run around. He likes to keep the defense on their toes. He likes to take over, and the Titans did not allow him to do that. He was contained. You see when he tried to run around, there'd be a defensive lineman right in his face. He couldn't do what he wanted to do with the football. And I think that was the difference in the game.
Yeah. A good friend of the show and Titans fan, Jimmy McClain, brought this up to me right after that game. And it was a very good point that I didn't realize. Lamar Jackson's more effective throwing to the outside. And what the Titans did was they made him throw inside. And not only that, but him and the Ravens were super efficient on 4th-and-1s, 3rd-and-1s. They maybe converted one against the Titans. The Titans did a really good job, like they did with the Patriots the week before. Containing Lamar Jackson, making him beat them, throwing towards the inside of the field, which he is not as good at.
Yeah,
and it shows that he has a lot farther to go, even though he is extremely talented.
You know, I'm going to disagree with both of you guys here. My stance on Lamar Jackson, I think he had a phenomenal year, and obviously I was very shocked to see the Titans go in and beat them. I actually had the Ravens as my Super Bowl pick from way early in the season.
Wouldn't blame you.
Yeah, but here's my thing with Lamar Jackson. He had a great year, and by no stretch of the means do I have any sort of evidence to back this up that he's going to have a bad year next year, but I think Lamar Jackson is a one-trick pony.
Do you think so? You think it's a lot like
I think it's a lot like Colin Kaepernick
or like RG3
or RG3.
Yeah. You give them a year to scout. So you think he's more RG3 than Vic?
I absolutely do. I think that they have seen him now, especially because he runs so much. That's going to become predictable in the future, and he had a great year this year, and I mean, I hope he doesn't slow down next year, has an off year, but I really have a hard time believing that the NFL hasn't really seen a guy year in and year out, a quarterback that is a dual threat like Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, you have guys like Russell Wilson, but they're mainly just an arm talent who can run.
Yeah.
Like Russell
Wilson. It's like a second option for them.
Yeah, Russell Wilson is a phenomenal quarterback and he can run. Lamar Jackson's a running first quarterback is quite talented throwing the ball.
Yeah, he has like a 50-50 option. Like Russell Wilson, you expect him to drop back and pass before he takes off. Lamar, yeah. I mean, he could take off whenever.
Absolutely.
But I think the difference between Lamar Jackson and RG3, you can see that Lamar is just built differently. Because you can the difference between RG3 and Lamar Jackson, RG3 had a phenomenal rookie year. I mean, he was running all over teams until he got hurt. But you see Lamar, he takes hits. Like, there's been times where I'm like, there's no way he's getting up. And there he is. He's getting back up right to the huddle. So, he does take those risky plays where, I mean, he will take a hit, which is surprising because you don't see quarterbacks taking hits, but he's very free. He likes to run.
Yeah, I really do hope I am wrong in this instance, but it's kind of similar to what we talked about with the Browns earlier. A lot of people were saying, oh, Baker isn't as good because now they have tape on Baker. They think he's predictable. They know what he's going to do. I kind of see the same thing with Lamar Jackson. I think he had a breakout phenomenal year, but I just don't see him doing this consistently in the future for the NFL.
If you asked me before the Titans game, I'd completely disagree with you, but I feel like there is a chance. I think there's a chance that you are right, because if teams look at what Mike Vrabel did, what the Titans did, I mean, it worked. Mm-hmm. They found his weaknesses and they exploited them.
And that was just in a season's worth.
Yeah.
And the big question is, I can't say for sure if it will happen or not, because we saw Lamar jump from his rookie year. He played like 6 games sparingly. He was kind of at the same level as Baker Mayfield, a little bit lower, to 38 touchdowns and the MVP. So I don't know if he's going to make that same jump, or if what you said, teams are finally going to start adjusting to him the way they did Kaepernick, the way they did RG3, or if he's going to be a Russell Wilson Vic type guy.
Yeah, I do agree to a sense. Now that they do have a full year's worth of tape, I do think they'll be able to put together better defensive schemes to contain him, which I think if he wants to stay at the elite level like he did this year, he's just going to have to learn to adapt. And I think it's all going to come down to him being able to figure out how to adapt to these new schemes, being able to read the defense. And if he can adapt, I don't see him not being an elite quarterback in this league.
Yeah, you definitely saw him this year with the run game. It was almost like a college football play style, like running all over teams and things like that, because that's something you really see more in college football than the NFL. And Jimmy, like you said, brought up a really interesting point. Like, if the Titans were able to do that in one season and pick up that Lamar wasn't able to throw inside, unless he learns to do that and unless he can adapt to these changes that teams are making, I don't know what the future holds for Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. We're about 30 minutes into this episode of our Super Bowl episode. We have not talked about the Super Bowl yet. Before we wrap up the rest of the playoffs, I want to ask you a quick question. Most impressive team of the playoffs thus far?
Tennessee Titans.
Tennessee Titans.
Kansas City Chiefs. Let's talk about them. So, come on. Have you seen the Chiefs?
Yeah, but
To be fair, the Titans have been
the Titans
phenomenal.
Surprised a lot of people.
Yeah, but we're gonna moving on to the Super Bowl now. We have the Chiefs and the 49ers. Now, let's look back at how each team got to the Super Bowl, especially through their playoff games. I mean, let's start with the Chiefs. Are you kidding? That first game, down 24-0 to the Texans.
I turned it off.
What did they scored 38 unanswered?
Yeah. It was 24-0 and me and Grant went to go get food and we came back and it was 24-24.
It's like I've never seen such a good comparison to two teams in a different sport, but they are so much like the prime Golden State Warriors, where MVP Steph Curry, if he comes in, they're down 15. There's this, like, I've never felt this in a football game before. If the Chiefs are down 21,
they're not out of it.
It's not only that they're not out of it, you feel like, okay, when are they going to come back? Watching the Warriors with Curry, Durant, Klay Thompson, especially like during the finals in the playoffs, when they were down 12 against the Cavs or even the Rockets, you felt like, all right, when's the run going to start? It's become kind of inevitable at this point. And that's just a testament to how great this offense is. Yeah, Patrick Mahomes, best quarterback in the league. Tyreek Hill. Travis Kelce, I mean, for two playoff games, even last year, Mahomes was great in the playoffs, but for these two playoff games, he's been stellar.
Yeah,
so good.
They've kind of been unstoppable other than the very first quarter they played in this playoffs.
Yeah, since then, yeah.
They've really just went on this run where nothing is going to stop them. I mean, and when you have a facilitator in Patrick Mahomes who can just pick out the defense just to... You got Tyreek Hill. I mean, Tyreek Hill's extremely fast.
And you have Hardman, too.
He's extremely fast, too. And you still have Travis Kelce. I mean, they're just elite. They have so much speed on that team, and they're just hard to stop. It's hard to pick out. Like, you got to pick out one person who you can completely take out of the game, but yet you got two, three other guys who can kill you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, Anthony... I am going to disagree again here. And
I love this.
I want to talk about how the Chiefs got to Miami. So they went in and they ended up beating a 10-6 Texans team. And then they went
underachieving in, Texans team. Yeah. I'll give you that.
And a 9-7 Titans team. And while they were down big, they're supposed to win that game. And it was extremely impressive that they came back, but at the end of the day, they were supposed to win that game. And you look at how I really weigh this Super Bowl is, how did the Chiefs get to Miami, and how did the 49ers get to Miami?
Okay.
So that's kind of my take
now
on that.
I will agree with you on this. I think the Chiefs playoff run has been pretty remarkable.
They've kind of had a Cinderella setup.
But if you're looking at the Texans, not a great defense. Titans, better defense. Huge jump. 49ers, phenomenal defense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's start talking about them and how they got to Miami. I mean, it's been two things. Defense and the run game. We're going to be talking about Jimmy Garoppolo, but his arms better be warmed up because he has barely thrown the ball this playoff. It's been the Raheem Mostert show. It's been Tevin Coleman. It's been the even Matt Breida. The running game, you've got Bosa going to be the defensive rookie of the year. You have Quan Alexander coming back and Richard Sherman.
Back to the Super Bowl.
Kind of a career revival for mm-hmm. Richard Sherman. So what has really impressed you with the 49ers thus far against their games against the Vikings and Packers?
Their defense. I mean, their defense is elite. They have the best defense in the NFL. And
yeah.
The thing is, people are like, well, there are questions with Garoppolo. Obviously, hasn't thrown the ball very often, but I don't think it's going to come down to it being in Jimmy Garoppolo's hands. I think the defense of San Francisco is going to handle the Kansas City Chiefs.
Okay.
I think the most impressive thing, Mitch, like you said, is their defense. The way they were able to hold a very talented Vikings team and a very talented Aaron Rodgers and Packers. And I think it'll be interesting to see what they do against the Chiefs, but I do think they will contain them. And also their play calling and Shanahan, their play calling has been very good.
Yeah. Kyle Shanahan's pretty great.
I miss Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah, Kyle Shanahan. Like, I always hear when they're 49ers are playing, he was on the Browns. The Browns should have hired. He hated being on the Browns. Do you know what he had to do in Cleveland? He had to make Johnny Manziel a wide receiver Do you remember that game?
Yes, I do remember that.
They had the trick play. It was gimmicky, but like, I mean, when he was there, we went 7-9, and that's a Super Bowl in Cleveland.
That is
so.
Yeah.
The big question I have with San Francisco, especially on their defense is really great, but do they have the firepower to match Tyreek Hill, to match Hardman, to match Kelsey? I mean, you have Kittle on the other side. He kind of negates Kelsey with that way, but I don't see San Francisco having the firepower on the defensive side that Kansas City has on the offensive side. We're arguably talking about one of the greatest offenses of all time.
Yes, but we're still looking at the best defense in the NFL right now. And, I mean, Saleh with his defensive mind,
yeah.
Potentially could have been the Cleveland Browns coach, but not. I still think he's going to be able to shut down the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, his defensive schemes and right, like, when you watch the 49ers, like, right when you forget about someone on their defense, he makes a play.
Yeah.
And absolutely. You see that with Richard Sherman almost every week. Right when you forget about him, you think he's a non-factor. There he goes. He makes an interception.
Yeah.
So I just feel like guys are going to step up when they need to step up, and I think they'll make the plays.
And, I mean, looking at their games against the looking at the Vikings game, our boy Stefanski, they did look really good against New Orleans the week before, and they walk into the 49ers' house, and they are dominated for four quarters.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk Cousins looks horrible. He looks like he did normally. But and they have the next week, Aaron Rodgers, who is playing the best football of his career for like 5 years. He's really found a groove with that Packers team, and what was it, like 28-0 at half, 21-0
something
at half?
Like that.
It's they're bad. Smothering.
And but, that was a surprising thing about the playoffs in itself. Like guys like Tom Brady and guys like Aaron Rodgers, you expect them to go out there and perform and be able to pull out big wins, especially in the playoffs. And seeing obviously how the Patriots lost and how the 49ers contained the Packers, I think that was quite surprising.
It felt, I mean, if Lamar Jackson or if Deshaun Watson played better, or if Lamar Jackson won and if Deshaun Watson played better, I feel this year really would have felt like the changing of the guard season. You have Breeze losing, Rodgers losing, Brady losing, and you have Mahomes, Watson, and Jackson elevating their games, but it really just feels like the Mahomes show for everything. And the 49ers, I mean, I do think this is a really interesting Super Bowl matchup because I think the Chiefs and the 49ers are kind of two sides of the same coin. Like we said about the Chiefs' schedule thus far in the playoffs, it's felt more elevated each time. The 49ers, I could say the same thing. You go from Kirk Cousins, Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes. I'm making a huge leap with my arms. You can't tell, but they have not seen somebody like Patrick Mahomes thus far. And I do want to talk about now Mahomes versus Garoppolo. This is going to be the headline. I mean, would you disagree with me saying Mahomes is the better quarterback?
No, he definitely is the better quarterback. But what you've seen so far throughout the 49ers season, it hasn't come down to Garoppolo at all, really.
Yeah.
It comes down to the defense really just supporting Garoppolo in that run offense. So, I mean, Patrick Mahomes, clearly the better quarterback in the matchup. But I still just don't see it coming down to Jimmy Garoppolo.
Okay. Okay, question. If it does, do you trust Jimmy Garoppolo? Do you trust Jimmy Garoppolo? Because I do think Jimmy Garoppolo is one of the best game managers in the NFL.
Like, are you talking like a two-minute drill situation?
Two-minute drill. I mean, the 49ers, they're known for him. Montana, Young.
I mean, I gotta believe in him.
I'm down four. I'm at my own 20. Do I trust Jimmy Garoppolo when he's thrown 27 passes this playoffs? I have his stats right here. We'll talk about them, but I don't know if I can trust him.
It's hard to trust him. It is, but the 49ers, they've been so dominant. I would have to put my belief in Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, he's fresh.
You think they're going to have it out of reach where they're not going to let Garoppolo ruin it for them?
I don't. You can see their play calling throughout the playoffs. He hasn't thrown many balls. I really think they're just going to have that run-oriented offense, mainly see running. And, I mean, if it comes down to it, he will. I mean, hopefully make the plays at the end.
Yeah.
I agree with you guys. Hands down, no question, Mahomes is the better quarterback here. But where I disagree is if it comes down to the hands of Jimmy Garoppolo, the 49ers will lose.
I agree.
He has not been active in the playoffs, and I think if it comes down to it in the Super Bowl...
This is his third playoff game.
Yeah, his third playoff game. I mean...
Might crack under pressure.
I really don't believe in Jimmy Garoppolo. If it comes down to that, then the 49ers will lose.
I can't believe in him because I haven't seen anything from him. Yeah. I'll say his stats right now. This playoff, two games, 17 for 27, 208 yards, one touchdown, one interception. You want me to bring up Patrick Mahomes' stats? 46 for 70, 615 yards, eight touchdowns, no interceptions. He's yet to throw an interception in his playoff career.
You bring up a great point. I mean, Patrick Mahomes, you've seen him dominate throughout the playoffs, and you just really haven't seen much action from Jimmy G. So it's really hard to think what he's going to do. But, I mean, he's really good at managing that 49er offense because you have George Kittle and you have that solid run game. It's kind of...
You even have, like, Debo Samuel. Yeah, he's been really good this year.
They have Emmanuel Sanders, too, I think.
Yeah, they do.
They have solid options. So I think he has the weapons to succeed. If it does come down to him needing to make plays, him hitting receivers, I think he has the weapons to do it because he's done it all year. I think it just comes down to him making those plays.
Do you guys have anything else to say before we pick the winner of the Super Bowl?
Jimmy G, I'm sorry. I don't believe in you.
I'm also sorry. I haven't seen anything. So this is the finale of our game picks for this season. And I've tallied up all the predictions we made for the NFL. And here are the final results before the Super Bowl. I had 24 points. I got 24 games right. Mitch had 20. Justin, 21. Andrew, 21.
We miss you, Andrew.
So, yeah, Andrew, I have not said this, but Andrew cannot be here. He's with us in spirit. We have his game picked.
He always is with us in spirit.
Absolutely. So, I mean, even though I won, and I'll take that proudly, let's pick this game. So, I guess I'll start. I mean, I think you can tell I'm very high on Patrick Mahomes. I'm very high on the Kansas City Chiefs. I think they win this game 31-20.
Okay. Here's my take. I think the 49ers are going to win. As much as I don't believe in Jimmy Garoppolo, I think the 49ers are going to win. And here's why. When you look at the top six players from each team, there is no question. Kansas City wins by a mile. They have the better top six players. But where I think the 49ers make up for that is, when you look at the roster top to bottom, the 49ers have the better overall team.
They're deeper.
Much deeper. And like I briefly talked about earlier, no disrespect to Andy Reid. He's a great coach. But I think Shanahan's play calling, especially in the Super Bowl, I think that could be a huge factor in this game. And with all that put together, and as long as it doesn't come down in the hands of Jimmy Garoppolo, I got the 49ers.
Is it fair to say that Shanahan kind of made the jump we all expected Sean McVay to make this year? I mean,
yeah,
they've both been in the Super Bowl, but I think Shanahan, I'd rather have Shanahan right now. I will say that with quite confidence. Yes, I'll say that with great confidence. So you're going 49ers.
I am.
I have Mitchell Schwartz, former Brown, becoming a Super Bowl champion. Mitch, what do you have?
I've clearly got the 49ers. The difference of this game is going to be that 49er defense. I think Patrick Mahomes, you're going to see him crack under pressure for the first time in the playoffs. The 49ers defense is going to contain him. They're going to contain that speed that they have. And I think Saleh is going to put together a great defensive scheme to stop the Chiefs, and the 49ers will win.
Yeah. Okay. Also, Mahomes' first Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And Garoppolo's. So
Garoppolo's got a ring.
Well, I mean. Garoppolo's sat.
Fair enough. His first Super Bowl he's starting or playing.
Yeah, his first.
So we'll take it as that. We'll take it as two quarterbacks that have never actually played in the Super Bowl. So I don't think there will be any like seniority, like veteran experience coming in here.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. So I think it could make for a very interesting game.
I think this is one of the most interesting Super Bowls in a while because of that. There's kind of a lack of experience.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going to happen. The Patriots are not in the Super Bowl. These are two new teams, and there is an element of the unknown.
Yes.
Andrew is going with me. He's going with the Chiefs. So we're split 50% Niners, 50% Chiefs. I will say this is my final word on the Super Bowl. The last time the Super Bowl was hosted in Miami, 2006. Do you know who played in 2006? It was Peyton Manning making his Super Bowl debut again with the Indianapolis Colts, facing the stout Chicago Bears defense. Do you know who their quarterback was?
I do not.
Rex Grossman, game manager. Even with Devin Hester returning the opening kickoff to the house, do you know who won that Super Bowl? The best quarterback on the field. It was Peyton Manning. His first Super Bowl. He got the job done in Miami. I believe that's going to happen. I think history is going to repeat itself in 2020. I think Patrick Mahomes gets his first Super Bowl. And I don't think it's his last.
That's a very interesting point, because that is really what you see. You see the Chiefs offense, and then you got the 49ers defense. So this could really make for an interesting game. And I didn't realize that the last Super Bowl in Miami was that matchup.
Quite proud of that comparison.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it, and hopefully it is more interesting than last year's.
Oh yes, God, regardless, yeah. I think we're going to have a way more entertaining Super Bowl than last year, and I mean, regardless the winner of this Super Bowl, I think these two teams are two of the top. Clearly, they're going to be the talk of football for a while. I think we could see this matchup potentially in the future. I mean, you can see kind of like a new era of the NFL. You see these younger players kind of taking over. You see this, the old age of how we talk about these quarterbacks kind of on that downward slope, potentially possibly retiring. So you see these new quarterbacks kind of taking over the league. Like, yeah. I just feel like we're in a new era.
I think for both teams, this is kind of just the beginning.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Especially if, like, I mean, if Jimmy Garoppolo pans out, but we obviously know Patrick Mahomes will be dominating the league for years to come. So, I think we're about at an hour. Do you guys have any final words that you want to say?
I don't think so. I think I'm very interested to see what happens in the Super Bowl here. And it was definitely a great way to start off season two of the Tone Zone.
Oh, absolutely. Mitch, do you have anything to say?
Thanks for having me. It was a great show.
I do want to say, before we close, tonight will be the first game that the Lakers play after the death of Kobe Bryant. And do you guys have anything to say about what Kobe means to you and kind of the impact he's had, and yeah, just anything about that?
Kobe is one of the faces of basketball, and I think he still is. And it was really tragic to hear what happened, especially with his daughter Gianna.
Yeah.
And it was really so unexpected. I really think he was just starting to give back what he had to give, especially to the NBA. I think he had so much more to give.
Yeah. I'd say especially with women's basketball, because him and his daughter were such big advocates for it. And you saw the love that his daughter had for playing basketball. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it's just heartbreaking.
Yeah. Kobe will forever be a legend, and rest in peace to all those who passed in the helicopter crash.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, when I saw the news, I just really didn't believe it. And then more news and more news just kept coming out, and you're just like, wow, this like actually happened. And the thing is, like, Kobe wasn't just known here. He was a worldwide public figure.
Loved in China.
Everybody loved him. And you could see, like, right after he retired, like, you didn't see Kobe that often. You kind of forgot about him. And now that his daughter was getting older, he was back. You could see him at NBA games.
He was coaching his daughter.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, he was obviously a family man, and it was a sad day, and the whole world mourns.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I can't, he's like by far my favorite basketball player of all time. And he's definitely one of my favorite athletes of all time. But not only that, I mean, especially recently seeing interviews of him talking about his daughter and the passion that he has for all four of his daughters. He Did you see the thing on ESPN with the, I forget her name, but it was an anchor, and she was talking about an encounter she had with Kobe, and he was saying, oh, I love being a girl dad. I love having these four daughters. I'm so proud of them. And the one he said would carry his legacy was Gigi, and it's just really tragic to see what happened. And I'm sending all my prayers, my love to the Bryant family and to all those affected to that.
Especially Vanessa Bryant and the rest of the Bryant family.
Yeah. It's just, and kind of what's happened this past week is a testament to, it's really an achievement to what Kobe has done in his life. I'm not trying to deify him. He was not perfect, but the impact he had on so many people cannot be ignored. And the fact that it has brought a lot of people together to commemorate and celebrate his life and what he meant to so many people around the world for 20 seasons and 3 seasons out of basketball, which he really was just getting started.
Yeah.
And it's really a shame.
I mean, he was a legend. There's even players now that have changed their jersey numbers from 24 and 8 to another number just because they respect Kobe that much. And
yeah,
he just meant so much to the game of basketball. And I mean, he's going to deeply be missed. And I mean, everyone loved him.
Yeah.
He meant so much to basketball, but I think his impact really runs deeper than basketball and where he really affected people the most in motivation. He was inspiring, his work ethic. He worked so hard, you know, the Mamba mentality. And I think
that's transcended all sports. Yes. Yep. And
everyone
even
knows the Mamba mentality,
even outside of sports. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just think it's obviously it's a tragic moment in history. It's kind of a moment where the world stood still and reacted. I know when I first reacted, I was numb. I didn't believe it for 2 hours, but once Adrian Wojnarowski confirmed it, it kind of started to settle in. It still doesn't feel real, and it feels like, I don't know for you, but it feels like you've lost a family member.
Yeah.
And that's for so many people. And but the bright side is we've all lost him together.
Mm-hmm.
And we can bond through his memories, through great moments he's given us and everything that he represents. And I just think that's really important to cling on right now.
Mm-hmm. And I think like our generation here is like one of the last generations that we didn't get to see Kobe really shine in his prime because we were just still so young, but we still got to see Kobe play. And the difference is we saw how dominant he was and how amazing he was. And it really just, once it sinks in, like that he's gone, it's just hard to believe. It's just not right.
Yeah. I mean, I remember watching his final game.
Yeah, 60 points.
Almost 4 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, like, ESPN was replaying it, and I couldn't bear to watch it, but then I did towards the end, in just seeing the adoration for him and the love he had for his family. It's heartbreaking, it's tragic, but he's given us so much that we have to, I mean, there's no other way but to push on and learn from him and grow from him and take him as a leaping pad off and better ourselves because of what he's done and what he's given us.
Yeah.
And one last thing, rest in peace to Kobe, prayers to the Bryant family and all those affected by it. But everybody, make sure to listen. Tone Zone Season 2, lots of exciting stuff coming. So make sure you don't miss out.
End it on a positive note. Yeah, I like
end
that.
End on a positive note.
So thank you for tuning in. This is run at about an hour. Thank you all for listening. And I'm really excited for this new season. I've got a lot of great stuff planned, as Justin said. Our next Tone Red Zone will probably be a mock draft. So we'll start getting that ready. And I can't wait to share it with you guys. So thanks for tuning in.
Well, I don't know if it's possible. I mean, as basketball players, we're really supposed to shut up and dribble. But I'm glad we do a little bit more than that. Thank you, Academy, for this amazing honor. Thank you, John Williams, for such a wonderful piece of music. Thank you, Verizon, for believing in the film. Thank you, Molly Carter. Without you, we wouldn't be here. And to my wife, Vanessa, our daughters, Natalia, Gianna, and Bianca, ti amo con tutto il mio cuore. You are my inspiration. Thank you so much.